Chance of showers in the afternoon.
Chance of showers in the afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Second hour just getting underway here. Well, actually, we've got it's 11:06 in central France, and not that cold tonight. Thank goodness it's moderating a little bit. And we've been having a conversation here with my friend Ted Pike. But before we get back to Ted, I want to give you some details here. IamTheWitness.com is the website. Lots of information there for you to learn about some of the subjects we've been covering on the French Connection, as well as other more important stuff that's going on in some of these downloads and some of these interviews and other items that we've been doing over time. But we're going to go right back to Ted now. Ted, you know, who is it that's practicing this stuff as a source of power in the world?
Well, really, it is within Orthodox Judaism, but that's a very evasive question because, you see, Judaism today is divided basically between Reform Judaism on the left, conservative Judaism in the middle, conservative Judaism, and then Orthodox Judaism on the right, and then ultra-Orthodox or Hasidic Judaism on the far right. Now, the Orthodox and the ultra-Orthodox on the right, they have a tendency to very, very deeply revere the Zohar or the Kabbalah. And, in fact, the Hasidic Jews, such as we find in a lot of them in Israel and even in New York, are fanatics about the Zohar. They consider it actually more inspired than the Talmud itself. And the Kabbalah is revered by all branches of Judaism. We ought to make that very clear. Even the Reform on the left consider the Kabbalah to be esoteric, inspired scriptures, inspired definitely by God, whoever God is. If you go to some place like the West Bank, Gaza, the settlements there, you will find the Haredim, the ultra-Orthodox settlers there, absolute devotees of the Kabbalah. In fact, there's a vast festival of tens of thousands of Orthodox and ultra-Orthodox Jews meet every year in Meron, which is a city in Israel. And there they dance and they sing and exhort themselves literally for a week or so in memory of Simeon ben Yohai, who was the great Kabbalistic leader of the second century A.D. And they take Kabbalah very, very seriously. In fact, it defines their whole attitude toward the Palestinians, basically legitimizing some pretty brutal behavior toward the Palestinians and their children.
Well, so this is not a benign or an insipid example of religious practice. This is, in fact, in some cases, quite virulent and even dangerous to non-Jews who happen to be on the victimizing side of this whole thing, I would say.
Absolutely. And it has, believe it or not, it has great historical and even geopolitical ramifications because, you see, according to the Kabbalists, Israel occupies this middle place between the ultimate remote unknowable God and the demons and the Gentiles at the very bottom, and it is only fitting that Israel be over the Gentiles. I mean, obviously, Israel is the source of God's light and cognition and power as the Shekinah glory of God in this world. Now, according to the Kabbalists, the great tragedy of human history is because the Jews didn't obey the Pharisees as they should, God allowed the Romans to come in under Titus and later under Hadrian and to drive the Jews out of Palestine, and so the Jews got on the bottom. They became the persecuted, wandering Jews dispersed throughout the nations, subjects of anti-Semitism and persecution and expulsions and so on. And according to the Kabbalists, this is an unspeakable outrage and blasphemy that the Jews should be on the bottom rather than on the top. And so the great motive between all forms of Kabbalism for the last several thousand years is to attempt through intrigue and manipulation, through money control, through commerce, through money lending and all that kind of thing, and political intrigue, to eventually bring the Jews into a position of regaining their dominance over the Gentiles and the demons.
Have they done that, Ted?
Yes, they certainly have, and they are working very hard at it. You know, some people say, well, what is the motivation for ADL B'nai B'rith and trashing Christian symbols and values? What is the motivation of Lynn Abraham, one of the national executive board members of ADL, to throw these 11 Christians into prison a year and a half ago in Philadelphia, socking them with a possible 47 years in prison? What is the motivation behind this? Well, within observant Judaism, there exists this deep core allegiance to the basic ideals of the Zohar, which says that the aim of the religious Jew should be to do his part to attain eventual dominance over Judaism and Jewish values and Jewish power over the Gentiles, the Goyim in this world. That is the Zohar. Fundamental to their whole theology and their worldview.
So when we forge temporary or even moderately long-term relationships with Jewish groups, are we in fact entering into folly, or are we? I've got relationships with rabbis and from ultra-Orthodox organizations.
Uh-huh. Well,
I do it because it seems like they're fighting Zionism, as I hope that everybody would. But then I'm wondering, what is the relationship that they have with me?
Well, you have to realize that the ultra-Orthodox Jews are basically deeply committed to the values of the Talmud and the values of the Zohar. They are unmodified. Even though they may have alliances with us, as we also are resisting Zionist usurpations in the Middle East, nevertheless, they are very secretive and they are very, very undivided in their loyalty to the divine inspiration of the Talmud and the Kabbalah. And what you basically have there is they do have a legitimate quarrel with the Zionists. What we have here is basically an in-house feud between the Kabbalistic groups of the far right of Judaism, who say, no, you can't go in there to Palestine, Zionists, and you can't take the land by force and by political intrigue and by military might and by massive funding from the West. You can't do that. Only by the permission of the Messiah, when he comes, will the Jewish people be allowed to return to the Promised Land. And, of course, these Jews, these ultra-Orthodox Jews, are harking back to the very specific promises, which Christians also believe, in the Old Testament. Now, of course, we believe that Jesus is the Messiah, and I believe that when Jesus, the true Messiah of Israel, comes, he will lead the Jewish people, a remnant of beleaguered, chastised Jews, back to the Promised Land, and they will dwell with him there in peace and safety, fulfilling hundreds of passages in the Old Testament. That's the glorious light at the end of the tunnel of this whole problem of Jewish darkness and apostasy. But the ultra-Orthodox people take those same promises, they take them very literally, and they say only the Messiah can legitimize a Zionist state in Israel.
So and so when we come back, we'll maybe talk about the group that doesn't agree with that and has set themselves up to reestablish Israel as a country without the Messiah's blessings. Ladies and gentlemen, my name is Daryl Bradford Smith. We'll be right back with more from Ted Pike.
Broadcasting loud and proud from France, it's the French Connection on GCN.
And ladies and gentlemen, we're back. We've got another long segment of talk radio here with my guest, Ted Pike. My name is Daryl Bradford Smith. You are listening to the French Connection, and this is a live and direct broadcast from central France to you. Welcome all. Ted, I want to get right back to you. You and I have looked into some of the groups that are trying to get Israel back underway and have been now for 100 years. In fact, if you listen to Benjamin Friedman and you listen to Myron Fagan, you will understand that World War One, Two, and all the subsequent machinations of the last century had a single goal in mind, and that was the establishment of Israel with lots of money from a very powerful, politically orientated group of rich and wealthy and influential Jews in Europe and America. But there is also a component of the religious side of this, isn't there?
Yes, there is. The modern state of Israel endorses the Orthodox position. They look upon Reform Judaism, that's the more left-leaning Judaism, as basically illegitimate. They don't allow marriages of the Reform in Israel and other restrictions upon Reform. And there's a deep, very deep religious core within Israel, and of course the ultra-Orthodox that I've been mentioning are really increasing in power. They have a great clout in the Knesset now. And it's interesting that when the Zionists came in the 20s and 30s and so on, most rabbis were Orthodox, and they did not agree with the Zionist position. They were more like the Turi Karta people and so on. That was the prevailing mentality, that the Jews would have to wait for the Messiah, and they could hasten the Messiah's coming by good works and so on. But with the successes of the Zionists, the political successes, international support and so on, most Israelis have now gone over to a complete support of the Zionist point of view. I should also mention that the primary protagonists of Zionism, at least in the first half of the century and beyond, were imported directly from the Soviet Union, Eastern Europe, and so on. Menachem Begin was a lieutenant or a colonel or whatever in the Polish Communist Red Army, came directly down into Palestine and began work to subvert British authority and the dominance in the region, became a head of the Irgun terrorist organization.
Yeah, he bombed the King David Hotel, didn't he?
That's right, and he committed the terrible Daryostan massacre a few weeks before the United Nations Declaration of the Independence of Israel in 1948. And so these people like Jabotinsky, Shamir, Begin, and certainly Sharon, and all of them, they are reprehensible people, communists, Marxists, certainly secular, and so on. But they have a kind of a curious, a symbiotic relationship with this very, very right-wing and religious, ultra-Orthodox element which has existed in Israel and is actually increasing in power today.
Mm-hmm. Well, what group is behind most of the propagation presently of the religious side of this activity? Have you been able to start identifying at least some of the groups?
Well, let's put it this way. For the last several hundred years, I'd say more than that, probably the last 300 years, the Kabbalistic Orthodox element has been very strong. And in fact, if we go back to the first half of the 18th century, in the decades before the French Revolution, we find charlatans, and they were called Baal Shems or Tzedeks. At that time, they were fantastically wealthy and powerful wonder workers who were heads of the Kabbalistic Jews.
Now, what kind of wonders? I mean, you're talking wonders. What are we talking about here?
I'm talking about the practical magic that I mentioned as a part of the Kabbalah.
I mean, what kind of magic, Ted? I mean, this seems like, you know, is David Copperfield magic? I mean, what?
No. I'll just frankly come from my position as a Christian. In the New Testament, there are precedents of Jewish wonder workers, such as Simon Magus in the book of Acts, who was able to evidently perform acts of magic. And we're talking about casting of spells, making people sick, creating wealth for people, actually doing metaphysical wonders which astonished all those people around him. And what happened in the I've mentioned probably in a previous broadcast how about in the 8th century A.D. how that the nation of the Khazars was converted to Judaism.
Yeah.
And they migrated up after the Mongol the migration was finished by the time the Mongols came through in about 1250 A.D.
Weren't they phallic worshippers before that?
Yes, they were phallus worshippers. Very degraded, but the Khazars were very creative, military, aggressive people, very, very commerce-oriented, skilled in the arts, but also very warlike and monopolistic. They moved up, several million of them moved up as a result of these depredations from the Mongols to the east and in the centuries earlier into Poland. And even by the 13th century, there were accounts of the Khazar synagogues being higher than the churches in Poland. There were complaints about that recorded. And of course, Arthur Koestler has documented all of this in his fabulous book, The 13th Tribe, showing the Khazar or the Gentile Japhetic origins of Eastern European Jewry, which was a tremendously large number. Anyway, these Eastern European Ashkenazim, as they were called, really went for Kabbalah. They loved Kabbalah. And even though the Kabbalah was widely practiced among the Sephardic Oriental Jews to the west in Italy, Spain, Holland, Germany, and so on in France, nevertheless, the Kabbalah really took off among these proselytes, Jewish proselytes, in the east, and there emerged great leaders of various sects and groups of Kabbalistic Polish Jews.
Did we have Frankists come out of that group?
Yes, Jacob Frank was one of the great Jewish wonder workers, Kabbalistic Baal Shems of the east, and Jacob Frank supported a Messiah, a so-called Messiah who pronounced himself the Messiah of the Jews in 1666 in Smyrna, which is in Asia Minor, modern-day Turkey. And this fellow, Shabbatai Zeeb, proclaimed himself the Messiah, but then he was put before a firing squad by the Sultan and basically recanted, and I think he even claimed to become a Christian. Anyway, there was a tremendous interest in Shabbatai Zeeb throughout all of Judaism, both in the East and the West at that time. And Jacob Frank was one of these wonder workers who became an adherent of Shabbatai Zeeb. And his followers were called Frankists, and they penetrated into Western Europe and got into the secret societies like the Masons before the French Revolution.
Ah, now we're getting to modern stuff where people have picked up the story. Ladies and gentlemen, hang with us. We've got much more to come with this story and more from Ted Pike. Don't go anywhere. We are moving into our last half hour of some very, very important information. Please pay attention to this because, you know, this is the basis of the group that we are pitting ourselves against, and we need to understand just how they understand their own situation. And so, Ted, I want to ask you something before you go on with this story. This idea, this magical stuff that you keep talking about, I see it as booga booga. I mean, you know, I see it as, I mean, a witch doctor in the middle of the African plains or something. I mean, to me, it's nonsense, Ted.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. It just sounds like you know, an astrology page on in the newspaper.
Well, I come from a different perspective. I believe that when Jesus described these evil leaders as the synagogue of Satan, what he's saying there is that they're the church of Satan. And I believe there is a very intelligent and cunning a demonic reality in this world. It's not just the absence of good, which is evil, but there is a person and his demonic minions who are the result of a great rupture in the heavenlies in primordial eons in which these evil forces have been resisting the work of God and specifically the work of Jesus Christ to this very moment. And I believe that they do have powers. They do have powers, physical and metaphysical powers, and I am very open to many of the accounts of the feats of magic, the levitation, creation of substances, All of this kind of thing is fills the stories of these Jewish magicians who came out of Poland, especially in the years preceding the French Revolution. They mesmerized the aristocracy of Europe. In fact, there were others. Maybe I can just briefly mention a few. There was also Jacob Frank, who set himself in England as a Masonic leader there. He was considered perhaps to be the ultimate Kabbalistic wonder worker and rabbi of his time. Worked closely associated with Adam Weishaupt, the founder of the Illuminati, and also with Moses Mendelssohn, the founder of modern Reform Judaism. And then there were other Jewish wonder workers who converged on Europe and France. There was the Comte de Saint-Germain from Portugal, and then Cagliostro from Sicily. And what happened was they all converged on Enlightenment Europe. This was the period of Voltaire in France, of Frederick the Great in Germany, and so on. And all these people got together, basically both Gentiles and Jews, and they invested within Freemasonry, Grand Orient Freemasonry in France and the Scottish Rite in Britain and so on. They invested all kinds of Kabbalistic symbols, ceremonies, mumbo-jumbo, and so on within Freemasonry. And it was out of Freemasonry that the Illuminati, the Bavarian Illuminati of Weishaupt, was able to find a vehicle to jump the Atlantic Ocean and actually bring the Enlightenment doctrines, Masonic doctrines, even to some of our founding fathers in the era of the French Revolution.
Even to our dollar bill.
Absolutely. You look on the dollar bill, and there are the blocks of the Masonic pyramid. There's the all-seeing eye of the Illuminati. You also see the 13 stars on the back of the dollar bill. The 12 stars of a Morgan David, a Star of David, and you also see under that it says the New World Order. All of that is no accident. It comes from these Illuminist Kabbalistic elements which were floating around at that time.
Well, I got to tell you, I still see it like, you know, Santa Claus and the Tooth Fairy, to be honest with you. But whether they believe it or not doesn't mean that I have to give it credence.
Uh-huh. Well,
I mean, honestly, Ted, I don't have to give this stuff credence because it sounds like alien autopsies to me.
No, I think what you do have to admit, though, Daryl, is that there is a profoundly religious force going on, tying the millennia together, and we can trace that religious force clear back to Judea toward the antagonism between Jesus Christ and the Pharisees. And
the fact is that they believe it, and that's certainly clear to me.
Yeah.
And here's the next thing I'd like. We're in a modern day nightmare brought on by large sums of acquired wealth mixed with this doctrine, this religious dogma that comes out of this group. The combination is horrendous in the extreme, Ted, because what it is designing for us is the most horrible and monstrous ending of life. I mean, they killed 100 million people last century, Ted.
Uh-huh.
What in the heck do they have planned for us now?
Well, again, this confirms the basic theological guidelines of Scripture. The Scripture, both Old Testament and the New Testament, does describe very definitely, in again and again and again, the creation of a one-world government in the last days, presided over by the profane Prince of Israel, a messianic false messiah, Antichrist figure. And in Israel today, in New York today, there are Jews by the hundreds of thousands right now who are praying and chanting and reading the Talmud and doing their good works in order to hasten the coming of this Messiah figure. And it's tragic because the true Messiah came 2,000 years ago, the Prince of Peace, humble and lowly, riding on a donkey. He said, "Oh, Jerusalem, Jerusalem, how often would I have gathered you together as a hen gathers her chicks, but ye would not. Instead, they chose the Pharisees, the blind guide, the guides, the whited sepulchers, to lead them throughout the centuries." And so throughout the last 2,000 years, Israel, in a word, has been seeking a substitute husband to give it legitimacy as a wandering spiritual harlot. She's been looking for another husband to take the place of that husband she crucified two millenniums ago.
Well, you know my stand on all this, Ted, and I apologize for not completely wrapping my brain around your belief either. The facts are, as I see them, is that they indeed do believe what they're doing, and in fact, there are some quarters who are claiming that the Messiah has already come, and he is waiting to be announced.
Uh-huh.
And that is from a group outside, out of New York, but it has its roots in Ashkenazi and in Eastern Europe, and has migrated to the New York area. They claim to already have the Messiah waiting to be installed at the Temple Mount.
Well, yes, and there are all kinds of stories coming out of Israel about plans for the temple to be built, the architecture, the temple furniture. They're even raising, I understand, special heifers down in Texas to be used as sacrifices in that temple. But we really have to realize that we are converging on a general scenario, which is biblically and prophetically stated so clearly in Scripture. And I think even things like this wall of separation, which is now going down through the agricultural communities of the West Bank, this Israel's wall is part of the strategy to isolate the temple, the Dome of the Rock, isolate Judea from the rest of the West Bank so that it can be taken over free from Arab interference in the years ahead.
Well, it looks like that is a plan, and it does look like it's coming to into focus for everybody. And ladies and gentlemen, when we come back, we've got another long segment with Ted Pike. Don't go anywhere. We have more to discuss after these messages. And ladies and gentlemen, this is our last long segment here. We have a caller from Alberta, Canada. You're on the air with Ted Pike. John, I think?
Yeah. Hey, how's it going, guys?
Hi, John.
I'd like to commend the both of you for your courage in exposing this stuff. It's a lot of stuff, and a lot of people don't want to necessarily hear it.
Yeah.
right now, here in Canada, our laws are pretty much in a way where if I were to get up on a little soapbox outside and start talking this stuff, I would probably be arrested pretty fast. So it goes with a lot that you guys get on the radio and do this every day.
Thanks for that. But you got a question for Ted?
No, I don't. I just wanted to give you guys praise and say keep it up. And I do my part by printing out flyers.
Well, bring intelligent people, John, to this truth, because we need an army of not just decision makers. What we need is people who are persuaders of others, good examples for others, well-educated opinion makers in the world. Bring them to the show and let them hear how we were able to, with Ted Pike and Ray McGovern, talk about these issues in an intelligent and rational way and bring out these facts. I mean, look, this is not a trashing of Jewish people. Ted said himself earlier, there are many, many, many millions of Jews across the world who have no idea about this. This is not an inquisition against the Jews. This is rather an honest effort at looking at what we face.
For sure.
And I think if you can do that for us, you'll be doing a great thing. Thanks for the call, my friend. Ted, you know, I got to tell you, this is a tough slog we're in here, trying to generate enough interest here, Ted. What do you think we should do yourself to get more response from this? I mean, we've got the Christian community still believing in large measure that Zionism is in their best interest, and many of them have been lied to by their leadership, I think.
Yes. Well, I would encourage people to come to Daryl's website, which is I Am the Witness. And also, we have a very dynamic website, the National Prayer Network's website.
Yeah.
It's www.truthtellers.org. That's truthtellers, plural, .org. I have dozens and dozens of articles, brief, concise, powerful, and well-documented articles dealing with all these subjects we've been talking about today. And also referencing John's lack of free speech there in Canada, we have been working very hard to keep the ADL, the Nibiru-less hate laws, becoming established, especially on a federal level here in the United States. We have many, many articles thoroughly explaining that. We have a video, an 80-minute video. You can watch 7 minutes of that on streaming video at truthtellers.org, as well as three other major documentaries dealing with Judaica issues, the Middle East, and so on.
Or Israel, Our Duty, Our Dilemma, which is a book that Ted wrote. Extraordinary documentation within that book, Ted.
All of these are available at truthtellers.org.
And you can go, you can get there from my site as well. It's at the bottom of my site. You can go over to Ted's site and order those books.
Sure. And what we have to do is we have to get educated. We have to be courageous also, because if we have Christians, and I'm sure we have many Christians listening to this program, what I want to do is remind you that our Lord Jesus Christ set the example of going toe-to-toe, head-to-head, forehead-to-forehead against the evil Jewish leaders of his day. Now, those same evil Jewish leaders are now in the skyscrapers and now in the executive suites, but they are still with us. They are still oppressing the Jewish people. They are creating hate laws worldwide. They are creating a Gentile backlash of antagonism and even anti-Semitism against the Jewish people. And what I say is, it is not anti-Semitic to criticize these evil Jewish leaders, because the precedent for doing that is provided by the Hebrew prophets, John the Baptist, Jesus Christ, St. Paul, and so on. None of those biblical figures would ever be considered anti-Semitic. And I'm doing nothing different than they did in their day. I'm speaking out against the evil Jewish leaders in order to protect the flock of Israel from possible persecution in the years, even in the months ahead. So we have to return, in my opinion, to a biblically oriented basis, which says that it is no curse upon God's chosen people to reprove their evil leaders and to warn the people against them. In fact, that's a blessing to the Jews, keeping them from possible anti-Semitism and persecution in the future.
You see we're getting traction, Ted?
Yes, we certainly are. And many, many people are coming to my website. And you see, I've been on well over a couple hundred talk interviews in the last year and a half, and very, very little criticism, even from evangelicals, because after they hear me for a while, they realize that I don't hate the Jews. Rather, I am a practically a carbon copy of those great figures in the Old Testament who criticized the Jewish leaders, but at the same time, they also knew that God still has a prophetic destiny, a benevolent destiny for the Jews at the second coming of Christ. They realize that while I have to spit out the whole truth, and some of it's not pleasant, nevertheless, I have nothing but love in my heart for the Jew.
Well, you know, I've got to tell you, I see that they're trying to speed up their activities because they feel the pressure of this truth becoming a wave across the world. I believe that we are riding a wave of truth right now, Ted. When we come back, we're going to close the show out, and I'm going to give you an opportunity to maybe have a last statement to our listeners and give you a chance to be thanked for your visit. And ladies and gentlemen, we are back. We are back live and direct from Central France. And my name is Daryl Bradford Smith, and you are listening to The French Connection. This is our last short segment. My guest has been for this last hour and a half, Ted Pike and Reverend Ted Pike. Ted, I want to give you a chance to maybe speak to the group right now. We've got quite an audience listening right now, and hopefully, you know, that there's a last word we can have here with them. I'm trying to recruit one more person from each of them to come and listen to this programming. Just find one person, and we'll double our audience immediately.
Yes. Well, I have a weekly email alert, which I wish all of our listeners could get.
Yep.
It's about three pages, and it keeps right on top of the latest news about conspiracies or developments. And over 200 talk show hosts in America receive that every week. I just love to have our audience come to truthtellers.org www.ordersplace.org. We have an order place there. You can just type in your name. This will not be traded or sold to anybody, but it's a wonderful way to keep on the cutting edge of what's happening. And also, if you don't have internet access, I think most of our listeners do, but if you don't, you can just call me at home, and I have a brochure advertising all of our dynamic video and book products. I'd love to send that to you. My phone number is 503-631-3808. That's 503-631-3808. But I really appreciate you, especially Daryl, today. You are on the cutting edge. We are on the crest of the wave. And
Difference, isn't it, Ted?
I feel that the momentum is speeding up. There's a hidden agenda, which is reaching for consummation of the world empire. It involves persecution of Christianities. They're almost foolishly racing ahead faster than it's perhaps wise for them to go. But that's a position of advantage for us, because people are sensing they're going to have to listen and be more realistic about this problem than they've ever listened and acted before.
Well, I believe you're right, and I believe they've overplayed their hand, Ted, as they often have done in history.
Yes.
I think it comes from a hubris and a basic a lack of understanding on their part just how much they can push the goodness of people. And, you know, one of the things is that the Christian community is a very forgiving community until it is cornered. And I believe they are being placed in a corner by this group. And I think at some point these leaders from this community are going to end up paying a heavy price for their actions.
Yeah.
And I want to make sure that the people listening pass out that we must be gentle and careful with who we blame for this. And
exactly.
not to sweep up any innocent Jewish members of the Jewish community into this.
Absolutely.
When their leadership is responsible.
Exactly. Well, this evil Jewish leadership has really gone too far several times in the last year and a half. They threw these Christians in Philadelphia in prison for 21 hours. They also launched this blasphemous comedy on NBC called The Book of Daniel. And you and I have been making hay out of those things.
We'll
continue to seize the advantages that presents itself to us.
Well, thanks again, Ted, for coming on. You've been a very big help to me, and I will be talking to you soon, my friend.
Thanks so much, Daryl.
Bye-bye now. Bye. Ladies and gentlemen, tomorrow we have another great show in The French Connection. Please tune into that. Bye-bye now.